Welcome back to How to Be a Better DM. This is Justin Lewis, your host. Well, not really today, because actually today's a special episode where myself and Tanner, we are brought on as guests on Level Up Your Gaming, a show that is similar to How to Be a Better DM, but we talk about homebrew rules today. So I wanted to give you that little bit of context before we hop into today's show.
Welcome to the Level Up Your Gaming podcast. My name is Aaron, and joining me virtually, I've got Josh. Josh, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. Josh, it's been pretty busy, you know, trying to get things together, move things into a new unified space with the game. We're getting near the end of my game, obviously, and I want to try some new things. So,
yeah. And
how about you, Aaron?
Well, I'm doing really good too. But in terms of in the spirit of trying new things and talking about new things, a podcast actually reached out, the How to Be a Better DM podcast, and today we are also joined by Justin Lewis and Tanner Wayland. So, guys, how are you doing today?
Oh, so good.
Doing awesome, yeah.
Yeah. And then you also have a third member who couldn't join us here today, Caden Otley. He had, you know, he had prior engagements doing what sounds to be very interesting stuff around the U.S.
Yeah, he's the member of the show that actually goes out and has, like, real adventures, you know?
Yeah.
And he tells us about it, so, you know, our desk job lives feel a little bit more fulfilling.
Yeah, it's almost like we're there, bungee jumping with them, but, you know, without the excitement or happiness. It's great.
Yeah, or the memories. Yeah.
Or the memories.
So, yeah, I listen.
Does sound like fun.
It does sound like fun. I did listen to a little bit of your podcast. It sounds very much in the same vein of what we kind of do here, which is kind of an instructional podcast, tips for making more dynamic games. But tell us a little bit about yourselves and a little bit about your podcast.
Sure. Tanner, do you want to go first?
Oh, yeah, sure. Justin and I are both from Utah. We've known each other for a while. We first met years ago working at Papa Murphy's. So you knew we were destined for... Yeah. We were destined for greatness, but we also found out we were just equally nerds. And then as we got older, you know, we reconnected here and there, and we both found out, hey, we've been DMing, GMing, whatever you want to call it, for, you know, quite a few years. We had opinions also, and we're introspective people, so we're like, hey, why not? You know, and Justin definitely, he kind of had the idea, and since then, you know, it's been really fun. Like we've gone to a couple of events. We're starting another. So up until now, like our podcast, How to Be a Better DM, it's been like focused on helping people start to be a DM or become better DMs within, you know, their scope as is. But we're actually starting in a live play soon, and we're just excited in general.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if I can echo on that, obviously based on the podcast, you can tell that our bread and butter is D&D. We generally stick to D&D 5e. I got started playing role-playing games, actually, though, because of a Genesis, Fantasy Flight, the system for Fantasy Flight. At the time, it wasn't really called Genesis. It was just the Star Wars. I think like we did,
Edge of Empire.
Edge of Empire was the one I started with. Started with some buddies, and I had a Chiss Bounty Hunter, which was, you know, super cool. It was awesome to kind of get into that. And then my brother DM'd a D&D game for us, and that didn't really turn out so well. Like it was a kind of a TPK. Like most of the party died. I'm still a little bit bitter about it, but like after that, I didn't really have a DM for a while. But I was also working on like a separate podcast, and that podcast kind of went south. And then I was like, you know what? Maybe I should just try being a DM, and sort of things lined up. And you know, I was a DM a little bit sooner than the podcast, and then I started doing the podcast because I was like, you know what, maybe we can help some people. And you know, 2 years later, here we are. And like Tanner said, we do have opinions. Hopefully, they're not like feet. Hopefully they don't stink. But regardless, we're here to share them today. So,
well, that's what. Yeah, it's all about more ideas in the space and kind of being able to hear different perspectives on how things work. Because nothing's going to. There's no silver bullet. In the gaming world.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you're gonna just kind of find the things that work for you. And so the more ideas you get, the better idea you're gonna have to be a how to be a good DM, or how to, you know, improve your skill and craft yourself.
Absolutely.
So
and level up your gaming.
Thanks, Amen. Josh. There you go. So I think you've talked about it. I don't know if you talked about it there, but what is your philosophy as like a DM or even as a player in a game, going into a game?
I'll give Justin a second to think about it. For me, I think the key part is, maybe this sounds a little too pretentious, but I've been reading one of those self-help books recently. I think it kind of spoke to what I think in general, and what we try and do with each podcast episode is we're not trying to, I mean, eventually we're hoping to have a kind of consolidated, huge whole theory about how to be the perfect dungeon master. But until then, you know, the idea is like, hey, if you improve yourself like just a little bit at a time, then you don't have to feel overwhelmed. You also don't feel like you have to spend like hours and hours of prep time, and yet you can still have a like get incrementally better. I totally mentioned the book without talking about it. It's called Atomic Habits, but like okay, in that yeah. they talk about like the aggregation or accumulation of marginal gains. And I personally, that's my theory is like, yeah, I don't expect myself to be perfect at DMing, at perfect at talking with my players, anything like that. But if each time I'm trying a little bit better, I'm a little bit more communicative, you know, maybe next time I've planned a little bit more of the audio in the background, then in time it's going to be really good, right?
Yeah, definitely.
I think I would absolutely agree with Tanner in that my sort of nascent strategy for being a dungeon master or a game master is to do exactly what Tanner said, take every session as one more opportunity to improve the craft a little bit. That said, I have been sort of trying to come up with a strategy that obviously I came up with. I think the term is like evolution or evolved strategy. Essentially, breaking any campaign into like the case framework, so campaign, story arc, session, and then encounter, and for any given time period or length, you kind of work on the step before. So for a campaign, you fill it up with a certain amount of story arcs. For story arc, you fill it with sort of certain amount of sessions and so forth. I think that might be a little bit more complicated than I'm used to, because I feel like, yeah, like most of the time sessions I plan pretty well, but story arcs and campaigns I'm a little bit more off the cuff and like kind of letting what happens. I think when it comes down to it, ultimately you have to play to your table and play your table to you, right? So find what you like and then match that to players. And sometimes that changes. Sometimes you're trying different things out. But I think that's really kind of the biggest philosophy there is. Because if your players aren't having fun, then it's not fun. But if you're not having fun, still not fun. So you kind of have to find the balance between the two.
Yeah, no, I couldn't say that any better. I mean, like, that's very similar in terms of the lines that we kind of like, I guess myself, I won't speak for Josh, but, you know, I definitely, you know, am all about, you know, the iteration. I like the thing that you said about how, you know, you're not going to be perfect at what you're doing as a DM. And I think that for new DMs in particular, that's something that a lot of them feel like they need to be perfect at the craft when they get started. And, you know, I try to encourage is that you listen to this podcast, you know, it's about getting better. It's practice makes perfect sort of thing. So, do your best to make things fun for your players and it will be a rewarding experience for you.
Yeah. Well, I think one thing that a lot of new DMs run into as a major hurdle, you know, you want to be perfect, but a thing that I see a lot when I talk to people is they want to know all the rules. They want to have like the entire book memorized so that if anything comes up, they can go and just like dive into it and know exactly how to handle every single situation. And there's no way you can do that. Like a lot of these games have been around for a long, long time. And they've got rules upon rules and maybe like little supplements here and additional books there. And there's no way you can know all of them.
No.
And you shouldn't because your game doesn't use all of them. You should know what's good for you.
Yeah. I love that because especially like right now I'm doing the last episode that I did for our podcast. We basically going over downtime activities, which there's a section of that. And there's one about building a stronghold, which I don't know if any of you have thought about that, but I was like, oh, there's rules for this. I didn't realize that. And it's the most, like, you see that, you use that so rarely, right? How many, like, most campaigns you're traveling and going to different places, and there's rules about, like, oh, here's the cost, the timeline. Also, mm-hmm. if they aren't on-site supervising it, then you add another 3 days onto how long it, you know, it's a whole thing.
Yeah.
And new DMs don't realize it's like, hey, at its base level, even if you just were like, oh, do a strength check, do a dexterity check, and you didn't even tie them to the specific skills or anything, like, it's still a fun game and you can work to get it, to get better, but no need to get stressed, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and something I've also seen is, I've done the stronghold. We did that in the Waterdeep campaign I ran. But there's also when your players want to do something that's outside the set of rules, you know, it's not in the books. Yep. It's something different.
We could always count on that. Josh to segue into our topics.
I know where my place is. We just did that in the Cyberpunk game, was that they don't have anything for, like, street racing. They talk about it. It's a big thing. There's no specific rules. So I went and I stole them from somewhere else.
Love it.
It's exactly our topic here. So we're going to be talking about adding rules from other RPGs, if you haven't figured that out yet through Josh's excellent cues here. And we're obviously going to talk about this topic here with Justin and Tanner. Justin, you're the one who suggested the topic, so I'm going to let you get started. What are your thoughts on adding rules from other RPGs? How would you do it?
So I think, obviously, the first thing to do with this sort of topic is you need to learn other rules, right? And that kind of goes back to just one basic tip for first-time DMs, old-time DMs who are probably already doing this, but it's just to read lots of sources. And this could be even sources that aren't game-related. So, for example, you might be reading something, you're going to college, let's say, just random dungeon master, you're going to college, you read something in like a physics book, and you learn about some random physics rule. That might be a way to spark something in your mind about some mechanic or rule to add to your game. Now, I mean, obviously, we're going to talk a lot more about specific rules within actual TTRPGs, but again, the tip, I think, is to expand your knowledge base so that way you can draw upon those rules. You know, for example, if there's ever been any TTRPG on this show that you, the listener, haven't heard of or played, that would be an excellent opportunity to dive in and find some new rules that you could use.
Definitely. Tanner, what are your thoughts on adding rules? How do you do it in your games?
It fully depends on where I feel like. So a lot of the times it happens kind of like what Justin was saying, when I'm listening to like a live play podcast from other ones, right? There are a few out there that explore various tabletop role-playing games. And oftentimes what happens is I realize, like, oh, they do this certain aspect better. One, for example, that like relationships. In D&D, you don't really have a ton of mechanics around, like, relationships to kind of express your bonds or anything like that. There's this this TTRPG called Delta Green. Have you guys ever heard of this?
Heard of, yeah.
Yeah. They have this really cool thing where when you're creating characters, you create a certain amount of bonds, and you actually like put points into this, and you might be like, oh, well, what purpose does it serve? So since it's kind of based on the whole Call of Cthulhu kind of game play, right, where you have sanity breaking points, when enough damage to your sanity happens, you essentially downgrade the level of one of your bonds. And then when you have like time off and you've like you're between missions, so to speak, you kind of play that out. And I think that's such a great way to gamify relationships instead of just putting on kind of like a little like act within D&D. It's like, no, you can do that, but also, I mean, like 90% of the time the players aren't thinking about, oh, my wife back home of the character, right? They aren't thinking about that. Maybe they like think about it at the start and when the DM kind of prompts them. But then the bond kind of mechanic, it's just like, no, you have to think about it because you got a lot of damage and it's a part of the game. So that's kind of when I add them in, is when I feel like, oh, other games address a certain topic that D&D just doesn't like kind of mess with that much.
Yeah.
No, that makes sense. I think that's actually a really good example of it there. It actually reminded me a little bit of like 7th C uses a similar system to that in terms of like the like antagonist nature to like things that happen to your character that you have to overcome throughout the game. So like, you know, it really brings in your backstory and makes it like crucial as like part of the game experience in terms of what you're doing there. It's not just like, you rolled your background. Okay. Yeah. You go ahead and play that as best you want to.
We had a campaign I ran for some new players, and one of the first things I wanted from them was, in fact, to have some sort of relationships pre-built into the backstories, because I think that's extremely helpful to like flesh out characters also. And I was looking into it afterwards, and there are some other systems. Traveler has it, Fabula, Ultima, they've got systems where by creating bonds, it not only has like a relationship, but also gives skills or bonuses, and you can work together for those things. And I think those are great additions to any sort of game if you're trying to make, you know, relationships happen, but also so that backstories mean something. Like, these two people met, these two people have this connection, and here's what they've both learned out of that, and that they can work together towards that thing.
Yeah, if I can add, I think this, specifically the topic of relationship mechanics, can actually touch on the idea that with some of the mechanics you bring from other games, you don't even have to tell your players. So for relationships, as a dungeon master, a game master, depending on your table, you might decide to make it very out in the open. You are going to get clear benefits and clear detriments depending on how you treat these relationships. And that's part of the game, and they're expecting that, right? So a D&D example might be, you know, Curse of Strahd, where it's not so much, you know, hack and slash, but it's a little bit more intrigue and you got to figure some stuff out. But you could also, you know, if you have just a larger campaign, you could also just put this mechanic in the background to help you as the DM, kind of like what Tanner was saying, your wife's back home while you're out adventuring. Well, you know, as you don't spend so much time on her, maybe she finds someone else. And because you've neglected her, her points have gone down a certain amount that triggers you to write something, but they didn't really know that there was a mechanic involved. So you can play around with the players knowing these mechanics or not as well, I think.
Yeah. And it can lead to some very interesting story ideas. But I think with like that, with relationships, with bonds and stuff like that, one of the key things I heard when you first started saying this was that there aren't specific rules in D&D for this.
Well, maybe not as the type
not
of
as fleshed
like.
Out.
Yes,
not as like intricate or as interesting. But I think that's really, at least my perspective on this topic was that if you want to bring rules in from other systems, well, what are rules for? Right, rules are there to help define how a thing happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So we need to have some sort of system in place for our players to interact with this, the theater of the mind that is this game, the story. And if you have a detriment in the story system that you're using, something that's missing, finding it in another source, like you were saying, Justin, doesn't matter what the source is. You find something and you pick it up and you use it. Now, I think the real question then is, are we doing lift and shift, you know, just picking up wholeheartedly and throwing in the game, or is it like homebrew with a recipe? Sure. You know, you get yourself, you know, the core mechanics of a thing and sort of make the changes that are required to fit it into your world and fit it into your system. I think that if you, there are some things that you can just pick up and drop in. Relationships do work really well that way because it's everything has, you know, it's super common to the whole conception of stories, but other things like racing or like healing or like magic systems and stuff like that, you can get really complicated. And if you don't pay attention to how those systems work, you can massively overbalance things or break entire systems. And that's actually something I've been worried about with a concept I've been rolling around as a story idea.
Yeah,
I think that. Go ahead, Aaron.
Oh, I was going to say, you know, I also thought about this when you brought up the relationship thing. I thought that was interesting to bring up like a different way to bring in dynamics into the story itself. And when I was thinking the topic, I was thinking along the lines of what Josh said there, which is how do you bring in like, you know, you've got a bunch of things that work in your game. How do you bring in other like you expressed racing there, but chase mechanics are always a dumpster fire in most RPG systems. And so it's like, how do you make that interesting? Because in D&D you have movement. You could just say, well, eventually you catch him, you know, but that's not a very fun experience. It's not very engaging. It's just like, well, you're going to get him because you're faster than him. But you know, how do you make it an engaging experience? And maybe you find some unique chase mechanics that involve dice rolls. So there's some chance involved in it based on your skill. You're getting plus modifiers to your dexterity throws, stuff like that. And you know, that improves your, you know, you catching up to the bad guy or whatever it might be. You know, or maybe it's like a non-combat thing that you end up doing there, but how do you adapt that into the system to make that one, work within the system itself. And then two, you know, a fun, engaging mechanic. Because you don't want it just to become a dice rolling fest where you're going back and forth. You're like, you're getting really close.
That is actually part of the Waterdeep story. Like in the book, you're just rolling to get. It's terrible. So, like, what I did for the Cyberpunk was I took Crash Pandas. You guys ever heard of that? It's like a one-page RPG.
I think I heard of it a little bit.
Where you play raccoons racing cars. And part of that was, instead of just going and, you know, roll for how fast you're going, you have to decide what action you're taking at the beginning of that. So are you accelerating? Are you turning? Are you avoiding? Are you using an item? And that's, you know, you make all these decisions up front, and then the turn happens and they play out. And that way it takes strategy. It's not just dice rolling. It's planning and working together as a team to get a thing done. And I think that took it from being just, you know, a session of let's roll and whoever's got the highest speed wins, to gamifying and making it more enjoyable.
If I can add, I think one important aspect of that is you don't want it to just become a button mashing fest, right? We all know video games where you go up against someone and they just spam whatever button is that's kicking your butt, right? We don't want to do that, because then it's going to just go around the table. Like you guys said, it's a roll fest. Everyone just says, I do the same thing. So I think, kind of to both your points, the trick is you orchestrate it so that way it does require some thought. Like it makes them pause and think, like, everything I do has consequences, you know, and so I have to think about what I'm doing. And I think that's a very important aspect of adapting it into your game. Otherwise, you bring something in and people just kind of do what they were going to do normally, and it has no effect, right? If you're going to bring in new rules, theoretically, you want people to think, wow, that's unique and interesting, and it improved the gaming experience.
So to swing that back in the other direction, Justin, the thing that I was thinking about as a rule I'd like to bring in and see if I could build something out of it was, I don't care for, and I know this is going to be a hot mess, I don't care for a lot of the elemental magic in D&D.
Interesting.
I think that in most campaigns, in a lot of the campaigns I've run and campaigns I've played in, people who play wizards or sorcerers or warlocks, they always pick the same spells because certain spells just are better.
Yeah. More damage.
Right?
Yeah.
More damage, or it's a clear advantage, right? Eldritch Blast every day.
Yep.
Because that's what's good. So I was thinking, how could you take, you know, that core concept and tweak it using rules from something else? And the first thing my mind popped to was the power systems from superhero games.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in a lot of those traditional superhero games, you pick an element. I mean, it's not necessarily an element, but it's a power style. And then you flavor it and you give it, it's a beam weapon, or it's a spread, or it's an AoE, or it's close range, or it's does this or that. And I was thinking, I had the Marvel Ultimate Alliance. No, it was...
What is that one called? Is it the new one?
I don't even know where I put the book. So, yeah, I had it out and then I forgot what it was. But it's the new one. It's Multiverse.
Multiverse,
the,
yeah.
The Multiverse Heroes. And part of it is going through and you can increase like the stats and add additional effects to the thing, but it reduces the number of dice you get to roll for it the more effects it has. And I'm thinking that in a D&D set that you could either, you know, cast it at a higher level or reduce the number of dice it gets or the type of dice, like, you know, maybe it starts at a D10 and goes down all the way to a D4, just single points of damage at that point. And the problem, obviously, is you're taking a rule system from somewhere else. You're taking the concept of the rule system, and you don't want to just break D&D, because then it turns right around and you, instead of somebody casting fireball every time, because that's what does the damage, now they're just doing the same thing with more steps.
When setting any scene, it's imperative that you tap into the five senses. When it comes to sound, one of the best ways to do that is with music, ambiance, and sound effects. And that's why we've teamed up with Monument Studios. Monument Studios provides easy-to-use soundboards perfect for dungeon mastering in any setting. If you want to see this in action, go to fantasy-plus.com and get 10% off of your first month when you get their Fantasy Plus app by using the code BETTERDM at checkout. Again, that's fantasy-plus.com and BETTERDM at checkout. Use music to amplify your gameplay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's important, I think, whenever you're adapting any kind of rule, is you almost have to break it down to the simplest concept of like, hey, what is it actually doing? Then you got to translate it. And then to make sure it's not overpowered, you got to keep it somewhat simple, you know? Because I think with the powers thing, that's great, where it's like, you know, maybe similar to a lot of things in D&D, the spell kind of stays the same for a few levels. And then, okay, you're level 7 now. And now suddenly your elemental magic, you get to choose between these three effects that you add to it or something, right? Kind of just keeping it simple instead of like just making it so that they can do whatever, right? Mm-hmm. One kind of gameplay thing from speaking of Fantasy Flight games, like Justin was talking about, in those kind of Star Wars RPGs, they have, I love what they do when they're essentially rolling initiative. Because with that style of game, you roll and then you get a certain, you know, what it's successes and failures and then like advantages. Mm-hmm. And I forget what the negative one is called.
But disadvantage.
Disadvantage. Thank you. But essentially, like at the start of combat, for however many advantages or disadvantages, you can have the players kind of describe things they want to add to the scenario, to the encounter. You know, it's like, oh, there's some boxes over there suddenly. Or could that wall be a little bit weaker or something? You know, just things that they can then act on, and it will give them a bit of a bonus on one of their actions. that's something I've always been like, oh, I'd love that for D&D. But I haven't really known how to do it because it's like, oh, that's, I mean, those are completely different combat styles, you know, with the D20 versus like advantages, triumphs, successes, all this, you know, in the fantasy flight system. But with this discussion, I'm realizing you can totally do it, but you just have to break it down to the simplest thing, which is like, hey, at its core, you are giving the players, like during the initiative phase, they get to roll something. And then if they roll well, they get to suggest certain things in the environment that then if they incorporate it into the storytelling of how they do like a spell or an action, it gives them like a +2, +5 or whatever, right?
Yeah. What's, sorry, just real quick. Another thing about your, you know, engagements and whatnot, Blades in the Dark does this also really well.
True. True.
They've got engagements and flashbacks that you can make the change to the story as it goes. And then you can, you know, prep things. And I think tying that into your idea would be.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Quality.
Go ahead, Justin.
One thing I would add, actually, just specifically on that, I think Fantasy Flight also in their Genesis model has, I think it's called Fate. In when you play Star Wars, it's Force Points. I think as a DM, that's kind of a nice mechanic because people are always like, oh yeah, can we just say my character had rope or had a torch? And I think that's a nice way to kind of, you know, force them to be like, sure, but you have to flip that over so next time I can make something bad happen. But thinking about your situation with moving kind of the superpower model into D&D, I do think that one you would have to sort of mix and match because, you know, for the wizards, you want that effect, but you don't necessarily want to, you know, nerf the paladin's two spells that they can cast. And so I was thinking, we just interviewed like a blacksmith a couple days ago. Super awesome experience, but he's, as far as dungeon masters go, he's a little bit more strict, or he used a term that I wouldn't necessarily call myself. But he said he doesn't let his players get health after level 5. And I think you could do something similar with spells. So maybe like either they only get spells up to level 3, but then at level 4, they get kind of like a blanket spell, and then they can modify that spell to do the different things they want to. Or maybe you say they can only get spells up to 2 levels behind what they are. And then you make like, here's the evocation spell, here's the illusion spell, and then you can give different modifiers and kind of make it that way. That might be like a nice mix and match, but I just, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's one of those situations where like once you start going down the path of picking that, you're basically writing yourself a new game.
Yeah.
Because, you know, so if you're going to be picking up rules, find ones that are going to fit nicely into the game or just come up with a new system. And so that's, you know, I really like the concept, but it's too much.
Yeah.
It's too much. Whereas something like, you know, changing the fate of the initiative and getting a little bit of story beats, it's small, but it's super effective.
Yeah.
The Genesis system also has a thing about ammo that I liked. In that I think by default, GMs don't track or players don't track ammo, that during decisive encounters you could fail and you could run out of ammo.
Yeah.
And I think that I don't remember a D&D campaign where anybody actually tracked their arrows past the first session.
Yeah.
Anybody I think that, that's ever, a mentality like, thing to, that you have to like, instill.
I'm not doing this anymore. Yeah.
Same with encumbrance, right?
Oh, yeah. No, no. What are you carrying? Who cares?
The blacksmith we interviewed, he checks both of those, by the way.
I was confused for a second. I thought you had a blacksmith in a game that you were talking about.
He's a blacksmith by trade. He plays D&D.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no.
It, like, took me a second. Yes. No, encumbrance is another thing. I've seen there are a couple of systems that use sort of a abstract inventory that you say you've got a certain loadout and there's just a couple of items, but then you can, you know, when you need a thing, you roll on a table to either see the quality of, did I get it, or is it of decent quality, right? And I've also seen Call of Cthulhu does the whole luck roll, you know, so, or even group luck rolls. So you're then going and saying, I need this for this specific item or for this specific, you know, trap or whatever it is you're working on, or that then maybe it's left to the dice to see, did I prep for this or not? If you don't want to track all the inventory. And that's another thing you can pick up and move without it being like a huge change to the core mechanics of the game.
Yeah.
I would actually say that also kind of touches on another point that I think I would just encourage the listener to think about. You should also consider, not just to make things unique, bringing in new rules, but you should consider it because it's going to make your life easier. Yes. Right? So, you know, a simple example would be, I'm actually running, quote unquote, running a heist one shot for my table. It's set in sort of a modern scenario, right? But still D&D rules. And D&D has no mechanics for a bomb blowing up a building, right? Or blowing up sections of a building. But Fantasy Flight in Genesis does have certain mechanics. I mean, obviously you could just assign sort of damage to it, right? But in Fantasy Flight, they have the damage threshold mechanics, right? And you have to do a certain amount of damage before anything actually registers. And I think that, you know, if you're blowing up a spaceship, you're blowing up a building, I think those are somewhat comparable. That could theoretically just make my life a whole lot easier in terms of, okay, well, now I got to make sure that the bombs are enough that it could or could not, you know, and it could really simplify the process. So I think when you are moving things and shifting them, definitely consider what's going to make my life easiest right now.
I think that makes sense. Interesting enough, when you said that, you know, I was thinking, well, did you think about like D20 Modern? Does that have anything that like fits into the D&D space there? You know, because it's a similar dice rolling system, and so maybe it has like a better rule set that merges better with it. And so, you know, a thing to consider for a listener would be to you know, try and find other systems that maybe follow the same dice pattern that you have. It's much easier to adapt those into your game because you have similar stats, you've got similar mechanics within the game itself, and see if any of those fit. You know, we're talking about changing magic systems within D&D here. And if you're new to the whole hobby as a whole, I would suggest getting like a good base of fundamentals and sticking with the base rule set until you kind of have that feeling of like, you know, a good understanding of how can I adapt these systems here. Cause you know, playing multiple systems will give you ideas like how you can do things and bring them in. When you start getting into the dice rolling mechanics, how they fit into the actual mechanics of the character sheet and the stat sheet and the stat line, how that kind of that plays within a combat setting, those become really, really challenging if they're not kind of nebulous concepts like the relationship thing, which is you don't have any, like, I guess, stakes on the sheet that do that, but it would be social interactions within the game itself. So, I mean, like, I love that. I like it in terms of the concept that it can give you like minor, like additional bonuses and stuff. Like you go back to your hometown or you go back to the city and you've got good relationships and you've got like +1 on persuasions or whatever you end up doing there. But, you know, those are much easier to augment, like as in like modifiers to your role versus I need to now come up with a whole rolling system for how I'm going to handle, you know, my new elemental spell casting, you know, at level 4, level 7, level, you know, in tiering and layering that. So just interesting things to think about there.
Keep your rules if you're going to be moving them. Simple. Make sure that they make your life easier, that they're engaging, that your players are going to enjoy them, that they fit within the system, and that they don't break things. Sounds great.
Yeah,
okay.
Totally
Do
agree.
All that every time.
You got the checklist? Okay, did you go through? What about other systems? So a lot of the other things we've talked to about here have been like modifying existing rules based on pulling in another rule from another system. So like, you don't like how magic works, so I'm going to find a slightly better magic system, or, you know, one that I like better.
Let's not do that. That's way too much work.
Okay. So I'm modifying an existing rule, or I'm meshing the genres. I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to add another role to the initiative thing to give, you know, these advantages, disadvantages throughout the combat situation here. But, you know, are there other things where like, again, in the vein of the relationship rule that we kind of talked about at the beginning, that you can bring into a game that, you know, kind of just add extra flavor to a game without having to modify like a core function within the game itself?
Absolutely. And I can think of at least two. I will say these two are somewhat situational, and you'll probably find that a lot of rules are like that, but these are, well, three. So obviously Insanity, that's a great one. Still somewhat situational. There's the sound concept, and this is in terms of, you know, I'm thinking of actually the board game, which I think actually blurs the line a little bit between role-playing game and board game, but Zombicide, where, you know, any sound you make, that's where the zombies are going, right? It is somewhat situational, but you could adapt that in terms of sound levels and things like that. And lastly, alert levels. That's a very common one, even in video games, where you're trying to sneak in a base, overall alert level of the base or whatnot. I think those can add some really nice flavor and not necessarily impact how you play the game, but more of what happens in the game, right? At this alert level, something's gonna trigger and the party's gonna be like, oh crap. I think those are some simple ways to just add some more flavor in.
Yeah, no, I like those. Those are great ideas. I as we're kind of going through this, I was also thinking of, there's a guy that I've done a podcast with in the past. He's got his own role-playing system called Hybrid, and he introduced, I think it's very similar to some other systems, but he introduced this concept of the Ite gaming engine, which are these like points. They're kind of like, you get like five of them at the start of a game, and you can throw them out to dynamically change something that you had done as an action. So like, if you roll a success, you can up it to a critical success. Or you can say, if you narratively describe throughout the situation, you can kind of change the direction of a situation to a point. And then other people can feed off of that by continuing to add to that pool. So it's an additive thing, kind of collaborating within the players itself. And you can effectively add that to any game to be able to add a little bit of extra, like something to it without changing any of the base mechanics within the game itself.
That's similar to the whole Genesis, where you get the points that you can add and remove. Yeah. And it reminded me very much of, I bought the Firefly role-playing game years ago. It is terrible, but it does have, because there's no, like, we're not going to get into it. The one thing I did like about it was that over the course of a story or episode, you were talking about, you know, doing story arcs. I like episodes that lead to a bigger story arc, because then it just contains them. But over the course of an episode, you've got specific story beats. And those story beats award story points. And you can use those story points to make something. You could then tie that into like those engagements or flashbacks for initiative rolls or for situations. You could tie those into luck rolls for finding out the... So you can like mix and match and combine some of these things together. Sort of build something out of it that doesn't change the way the game works, but really does help your players engage more with it.
That, just real quick, Tanner, that reminds me of, gosh, I don't know what the system's called, but it's the one for Aliens, where you're basically in the Aliens movies, right, with Sigourney Weaver. But your character doesn't progress, or your skills or whatever don't progress unless you get your mission done. And I kind of like that in terms of simplifying experience, rather than, you know, you fight a certain amount of enemies, you do a certain amount of things. It's you know, this is the one thing you need to do. If you don't do that, you don't move forward, which can be railroady. But that reminded me of that. Anyways, Tanner, you can go ahead now.
So much of this is making me realize that when you add something to your game, or even like, and this isn't just like other games, when you decide to focus more on a specific rule that's in D&D, you're trying to set a tone, right? And I think that's what a lot of these rules should do. For example, there's so many games out there, like RPGs, that like some of them are like D&D, but they're just harder. Slash, they're based more on survival, like Torchbearer, or you know, there's like a lot of games out there that if you want to be hard on your players, kind of like that blacksmith, where it's like, oh, you could get things from other games where it's like, oh, hey, there's all these conditions you can get, like hunger, you know, it's not just exhaustion, the blanket statement, right? It's like, no, there's all these conditions that can get added on top of you. And there's games, and there's even rules also within D&D, but like there's games that really focus on, oh, what happens when you lose a limb? What happens when, you know, it's an accumulation of difficulties. And if that's the kind of game you want, and that's the kind of game that your players are like down for, then focus on that, right? First look at D&D, like the core rules, and find out, oh, is there anything in here that I could play up, like encumbrance or something? And then if you find that there's some gaps there and you still want that that edge or that specific type of flavor, then that's when you need to start looking for those types of games. And it'll make your search a little bit easier too, because you'll be like, oh, we want a very whimsical improvisational game. You look for that, right? You'll find that kind of info more easily. If you want more hardcore horror, look for those types of games, and then you'll be able to kind of pinpoint the mechanics that you want, you know?
Thanks again for listening to our show. If you like our content and would like to engage with more of it, head over to our Instagram account, at HowToBeABetterDM, and give us a follow. Make sure to watch some of our Dungeon Master Rules videos while you're there to give yourself some more structure and procedure as a Dungeon Master. Also, don't forget to reach out with a DM, and we can talk shop, and I can get to know you a little bit better. Thanks again for listening.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead, Josh.
So, yeah, it sounds like know your players and run a good session zero is what you're saying.
yes.
Your listeners probably never heard those words.
No, right? We've never heard of those words. We've never done an episode topic on either one of those. So put that in the hopper, Josh. We'll talk about that sometime.
Yeah, you know, I'll just add that to our list. Know your players. Weird. Session zeros? Never heard of that.
If anything, for all your listeners, if you guys listen to us, you're going to get, you know, just like the top of the line info like that. And yeah, it's great.
Every time. We just talk about hats.
That's what it is.
You know, hats are really important, I will say.
So how Josh modifies most of his NPCs.
It sounds like we
kind of share a lot of the same philosophies in terms of like how to approach, you know, bringing those rules and stuff in there. It's tough. Adding new rules to a game is always a challenge, you know. Again, and I think that if you're new to it, you're probably better off going with the things that kind of always work. Like you talked about, like the alertness levels, the sound, the relationship systems, things like that, that are a lot easier to add at a broader level. And before you start, you know, modifying dice system and stuff. The only other thing I could think of is like, you know, what if you run into a rule, like you're in the middle of a session, you run into something and you just like, you know, got a rule for it. So how do you guys handle that?
Well, I think the simplest answer is make up something quick and move on.
Yeah.
the more nuanced answer is probably rely on your knowledge reservoir and see if there's something similar that you can adapt, right? So fighting a giant crab the size of a mountain, you know, you could adapt threshold mechanics to that because a fireball isn't going to really do much, but maybe if there's enough, you know, things like that, you could sort of adapt it to different situations. I think that's kind of step two, but step one is definitely like do this and then, you know, move on, look it up later.
Do you then bring in a rule to fill that gap, or do you say I liked how I handled that, I'm gonna stick with that?
Yeah, I think you can definitely do that. I think it depends on if you're going to see that scenario again. Like, it's kind of like how a lot of dungeon masters are probably on the FBI hit list because we all look up weird random crap. Like, you know, how much does just your right arm weigh or whatever. Like, you don't really need to know that twice, but sometimes you do, and that's sort of the stuff that you do flesh out a little bit more and kind of make it work. But also your experience will then inform later opportunities for creating rules on the spot. So it's kind of this nice virtuous cycle.
Yeah, Justin, yeah. I do have to ask. I'm sorry, Tanner, just real quick.
Please.
What sessions are you running that you as the GM don't know there's going to be a mountain-sized crab coming?
That's honestly a really good point. I think that was more of just an example, but to be honest, it could happen, right? Like, wild magic is technically a thing in D&D, and yeah, you know, if okay, that's the game you're playing, I actually knew we interviewed another podcast group where one of their members of the podcast, his main like modus operandi was not to plan anything, and he preferred it more that way, and
all right, we lost Justin there for a second. He'll return to us in just a moment, but you know,
back.
There you are. Hey, there you are.
Yes.
There
you cool. Go. Cool. 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 You guys didn't hear the end of what I said, right?
No.
Nope.
Well, I actually revealed like the secret of the universe, so I'm not gonna say that again because that's kind of a one-time thing.
Darn it! Come on. All of our listeners have been wanting to. I promised in this episode.
Where did I leave off?
You were talking about knowing about not knowing about the giant crab, the wild magic, and
how the guy didn't like planning at all.
Yeah. All I'm saying is it's very possible, depending on your DM style, that that could happen. If you are the DM that knows that's going to happen, you'll probably just look up stuff like that. But, you know, who knows?
Yeah. To answer the question as well, Aaron, I think if it's a one-time thing, I'll just try and, like, fit it within, like, the general rules of, like, okay, either an ability or a skill check, how difficult do I think it should be? Maybe I do multiple checks, right? Mm-hmm. If it's something just like, I'm like, oh, this is a random thing. But there are other times when I'm like, oh, I can tell a player's going to do this again. Mm-hmm. An example being, you know, like this one player, he was doing a rogue and he just was like, we were in a town, they just entered, and he's like, okay, I want to go out and rob some people's houses. And like, I just had to do that kind of on the fly, didn't realize that was going to happen. Didn't realize this was going to be that type of rogue. And then, so like I had to like play out this whole thing, right? And then I was like, oh gosh, that was rough. And then the next like in-game night, he's like, okay, I want to go out and rob some people's houses. Like, okay. And then from there, I had to come up with rules and like I had to go search for different things, like using mostly D&D rules, but I also came up with some randomized like generator for like, oh, how difficult it is a house to rob and the consequences and stuff. So yeah, it's, I think if it's a one-time thing and you can tell it's a one-time thing, don't stress too much about it. Maybe learn about it and like for the future, think like search other systems and see if there was a more elegant way to do it. But if you can tell it's going to be a repeat issue, then yeah, you got to find out a solution sooner rather than later.
Definitely. I agree. Do you guys have any other thoughts on adding rules to games? Is there other points that you wanted to hit or talk about with it? Josh? Sorry, I was just looking at you. I saw the face. Sorry, go ahead, Justin.
No, I was just going to say, I think it's fun, and I think as a DM, you should absolutely try and do this. And if you are struggling to find rules, go visit your local game store. The owner or the resident expert at the game store will know more than enough, and they'll be able to kind of point in the right direction. That's always a great option when you're looking for something specific.
Yeah,
definitely. Well, that's going to wrap us up for this week here. If you have your thoughts on adding rules to games, you know, how you like to add rules to games, you know, our thoughts on the topic itself, levelupyourgamingpodcast@gmail.com or facebook.com/levelupyourgaming. I want to thank Justin and Tanner for coming. Thank you so much for being part of the podcast here today. Once again, they are the How to Be a Better DM podcast. Go ahead and check them out. They were really gracious with their time. We really appreciate having you here. If you do like our podcast, subscribe to it, review it, recommend it to a friend, all those good things. But that's going to wrap us up for the week. So for Justin, Tanner, Josh, I'm Aaron. Have a good week, everyone.
Bye.